My name is Justine Hyde. I work at the Institute for Community Health in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And I have been lucky enough to have a study funded by NICHD over the last couple of years to do some qualitative work with adolescents who are in foster care and professionals who work with adolescents who are in foster care. It's been a really interesting experience. There's not a lot of research done, not a lot of qualitative research done with this population, and it's been very rich and very slow going. So I had hoped today to present mostly from the findings from adolescents, but I am still conducting those interviews at this point in time. So let me tell you a little bit about the study. The specific aims are to understand the circumstances leading to out-of-home placements among adolescents, and I wanted to get some information about why adolescents thought that they were removed from their home, and then get some general information from professionals about what they see as general trends in the circumstances leading to adolescents being in placement, to learn how adolescents understand experiences of maltreatment and neglect, to identify the most pressing needs of adolescents involved with DSS. In Massachusetts, it's DSS, so it's the Department of Social Services. I'll call it that from now on. And then to elicit recommendations for addressing these needs. And when I moved to Massachusetts, there was a real interest from the Department of Social Services to learn what adolescents had to say. So there's been some strong support from the central office in Massachusetts to do that. And then hopefully to utilize the findings for program improvement. A little context, every Department of Social Services or Department of Children and Family Services is different. At the end of the third quarter, they had some data online that I wanted to just share with you. At the end of the third quarter in Massachusetts, there were 41,302 cases open for children. 39% are between 12 and 17. And then about a quarter of those open cases are in out-of-home placements. So I think across the country that's fairly, it's on the higher end. There is a typo here, which I noticed last night. It's actually not 60%. I don't know what I was thinking. It's 67% are adolescents. Of those who are in out-of-home placements, 53% are minors, 12 to 17, and then 14% are 18 and over. And then almost half of all the adolescents who are in out-of-home placements are in congregate care. So they're in group homes, residential homes, or sometimes hospitals. They count those as congregate care. So when we think about the kids that are in out-of-home placements, a good number of them of adolescents are living in congregate care settings. So that's Massachusetts. Those of you who were at APHA last year know that. The sample is comprised of a variety of different professionals who work with adolescents in out-of-home placements. That includes lawyers, social workers, psychologists and psychiatrists, and advocates. So I have a couple of CASA advocates, volunteers, in the sample of professionals. And then adolescents are ages 16 to 18 and living in out-of-home placements. And it's a really small qualitative study, so I chose to focus on one office. There are 9 area offices in Massachusetts, and I focused on one. In Massachusetts, the area offices really vary in terms. They have standardized policies and procedures, but they're definitely not implemented consistently. So given the small sample size, I did just focus on one area office. I conducted open interviews, and at this point, I've conducted open-ended interviews with 22 professionals. And then I'm conducting a series of 3 interviews with 17 adolescents. And I I'm not sure that I'll actually get up to 30. That was my goal, but I'm hoping 25. I would be happy. And then some other things that I did. I'm an anthropologist by training, so I like to do a lot of different types of qualitative methods. So I've been a volunteer case review for the Department of Social Services for almost 2 years, and then I've participated in a lot of local and statewide meetings around this issue. I'm not going to bore you with how I've coded and analyzed, but I've had all my interviews transcribed, I've developed code books, I manage all the data that I collect in InVivo 7, and have coded them and generated reports for this analysis here. So before I move to the recommendations, because I actually think that there's a fair bit written about the problems that adolescents who age out of care face, you know, including homelessness and incarceration. And I mean, I think there are some pretty good, Mark Courtney's done some great work on tracking kids who have aged out of care over time and looking at what their challenges have been. So I really wanted to focus this talk today on recommendations because I think that's the most productive force for us. But a little bit about the context, a little bit about the common themes that I've heard between professionals and adolescents in terms of, just to provide a little background about where these recommendations are coming from. So what I've heard from both professionals and adolescents is that our service delivery models are really fragmented. People do not communicate, professionals don't communicate across disciplines. Professionals have varied communication with adolescents. There's a lot of passing the buck, is what I've heard. So someone is leaving one care facility and moving to another. Who's responsible for transferring their education, getting the paperwork done? Who's responsible for upkeep on the medical records and transferring those and keeping in contact with therapists? I heard a lot of different stories about how fragmented the systems are, and there's not a consistent body to help navigate an adolescent through his or her various movements, placements. This study was conducted right as the Department of Social Services was implementing a new model. So there is now a lead agency that is supposed to provide some coordinated care for adolescents. So that might help some of the fragmentation in terms of having one body that's responsible for, but I don't know. I think there's some mixed feelings about that. Another point that's come up across is that there's just an incredible instability in adolescents' lives, more so than other age groups. One adolescent that I've re-interviewed has been in the same placement. They move a lot. And that's definitely a part of a recommendation that you'll hear about later. But there's instability in their placements, in their services. Psychiatrists come in and out. They have interns that they're working with, and they're only there for a few months, and then they move on. And so there's an incredible amount of instability in services, and then in their schooling. There's inconsistency in their interpretation and enforcement of TSS policies and procedures. So across area offices, the area directors have their own policies and procedures, and for professionals in particular who are working with adolescents across area offices, it's really crazy making to figure out what they're going to get one day or next. And that leads into the child-centered philosophy that the department has is really challenged by the rules and regulations set by the services. So that means from the adolescent perspective, there are these policies and procedures in place that are sort of arbitrarily enforced at various times, and they don't allow them to be to be adolescents, and if you're doing really well, you're not rewarded with more freedom or more ability to access other kinds of services or programs. So it's hard to be truly child-centered, I think. And then supports for transitional age adolescents are catered to a few high-functioning adolescents. And I'll get to that, but I think a lot of people, as we think about what types of support services adolescents need when they age out of care, right now a lot of the requirements for receiving ongoing services require you to be a fairly high-functioning individual. You have to be employed or in school, and that's not something that a lot of people feel is realistic for some adolescents. So before I get to that, I just want to, I thought that in the interest of time, I would sort of give you a highlight of some of the ways that we can meet the needs of adolescents in care and then move into some more specific examples. So the recommendations that I'm going to talk about right now, one is to develop family-centered versus individual-centered approaches to working with adolescents and their families. Provide meaningful and consistent mental health support, the second one. Create safe, experiential opportunities to exercise independence and learn from their mistakes. Critically assess protocols and procedures. And then we must address the problem of fragmentation in our service delivery models. So those are the sort of five recommendations that both adolescents and professionals have come up with that overlap. There's tons more that I could probably talk all day, but those are some primary ones that both groups have come up with. So because this is a qualitative study, I'm going to share a couple of quotes from some interviews and then talk through some points, because I think the points are really nicely illustrate the points that are being made. So one community service provider, in terms of the recommendation of providing family-centered support, described the current service delivery model as follows. One of the issues with our service delivery model is that some of these places are 2.5 hours away from the communities of origin, and they don't involve families. What you have is the car mechanic model, in which you drop the car off to be fixed, and you pick it up later. And he calls it what we need is the Home Depot model, where you teach families how to, the skills that they need. So families need to find their strengths and resources to help their kids to stay together. I think working with families is incredibly important for this population. Okay. Most adolescents return home if and when they can. If there is a family connection, by the time they turn 18, they do return home most often. And when they return home, if the issues that have existed in the family are not addressed or resolved, then a lot of adolescents, I think, get kicked out. They leave. That's one of the reasons why I think we see so many adolescents becoming homeless. So there really needs to be some focus in working with the families. The families involved with DSS face some complex problems. I think that's pretty well documented. We need to figure out a way to provide resources and supports for families. We move from a social referral agency, as one lawyer called it, to a social service agency. So providing a referral to a service is just not enough for a lot of families. So somehow in our managed care fee-for-service model, we need to figure out how to get social service work back into working with families. And then I think from the adolescent perspective, working with parents may also help shift the perception that they are the problem. And that's a common, they're removed from their home and given services and put on medications, and they see that as, what did I do? So I think that might help shift that perception. In terms of mental health support, I think there needs to be a greater investment in the therapeutic relationship. So just telling kids that they need therapy is not helpful to them. What work is being done to make sure that they're able to develop a therapeutic relationship with the provider rather than an intern that won't be around for very long? I know people have to get their hours, but they should be doing it some other way, not practicing on foster kids. There's enough practicing on them. So there were a lot of professionals who felt very strongly about the fact that the therapeutic relationship, as they move from placement to placement, and then as certain agencies, I think, could primarily get Medicaid funding, they have interns do a lot of the work because they're cheap. And good, not necessarily that's bad, but adolescent, this group really needs a stable therapeutic relationship developed. I'm going to skip this next quote. So the adolescent's experiences of grief and loss are often masked. Adolescent behavior, we know, it can be very in your face and confrontational sometimes, and we don't deal well. I think a lot of people feel like we don't really allow them to deal with their issues of grief and loss, and rather focus on everyday crises or the symptoms of grief and loss. So we need trained professionals that can help adolescents learn how to process their feelings. And that requires being stabilized in placements long enough to develop trusting relationships. And then a couple of interviews with foster parents I thought was really, for those kids who are in foster placements, I think there's the foster parents that I've spoken with have been very active and they advocate very well for the kids that they care for. But they also recognize that a lot of the experiences that the kids that they've worked with in the past have had is one of an artificial parent, so to speak. So I think this one can say it better than me. With some behaviors, the agencies make it like, oh my God, we have to have them evaluated. We've got to hospitalize them. And she's talking here about kids who break curfew. So come on, kids do certain things. I have an 18-year-old who's doing the same thing. He's coming in an hour late. Granted, you have your kids that do have their issues, but they're also just like other kids, and it's very, very clinical sometimes. So, I mean, I think the bottom line here is that a lot of behaviors of adolescents are read through clinical eyes. And there's I think people feel that there's a real, that's the filter, that normal adolescent behavior is very medicalized. And it's a tricky line, you know, when do you... You don't know this adolescent very well sometimes, and you don't know what to expect. But I think the recommendation is that we need committed adults who will work with them during rebellious times and not kick them out of their placements. So being late for curfew means that you're in trouble, and sometimes that gets you kicked out of your placement, rather than having a kid stay with the family or with a group care facility and work through that. Like, what are the consequences of being home late after curfew, rather than just move them from one place to another to work through those issues together. And then finally, the time, patience, and meaningful support. One case manager said, you can't expect these kids to all of a sudden conform. It's going to take some time. Sometimes it takes someone to believe in you, to have certain expectations, the right type of expectations, and has the help patience to help you move on. It's not rocket science. So again, a theme of consistent support, long-term relationship building, comes up a lot in these interviews. And when people age out after care, there's a whole task force in Massachusetts that's working on this issue right now, but there's a general consensus that we need to start planning for someone who's going to transition out much earlier. Start planning early, adolescents need to hear their options multiple times. So just saying that I told you what your options were once isn't going to work. They need to hear it a lot of different times in a lot of different ways. Probably like most 17 or 18-year-olds that you might have in your household. And they need a lot of mentorship and guidance around next steps. And I think a lot of kids right now don't have that long-term mentorship and guidance about how to get enrolled in school and what your options are, how to find housing. The eligibility requirements right now, who can get support services after age 18, are not consistent across area offices. And that's a real issue, I think. And then the supports that adolescents need, they need housing, employment, continuing education, and they need lifelong connections, someone that they can call when they need to. And then these are just a summary of the points that I've made: family-centered versus individual-centered care approaches. Provide meaningful and consistent mental health support, create safe experiential opportunities to exercise independence and learn from mistakes rather than get booted from your placement, critically assess protocols and procedures, so try to be as child-centered as you can, and then address the problem of fragmentation in service delivery, and I think that's something that Massachusetts is currently trying to work on.